This is GI Insights on ReachMD. I'm Dr. Peter Buck, and today I'm joined by Dr. David Udisman to discuss treatment options for ulcerative colitis, also known as UC. Dr. Udisman is a professor in the Department of Medicine at NYU Grossman School of Medicine and the director of NYU Langone's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Center. Dr. Udisman, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Buck.
So let's jump right in. With so many medication choices and so few head-to-head trials, how do we choose the correct medicine for the correct patient?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, it's great that we have so many different options. And I tell patients we have 14 different options of different advanced therapies or immunosuppressive therapies, but it's getting a little more complicated. And I think before I go through the therapies, the most important part is getting patients on therapy early. Right. And if you get patients on drug early, they're much more likely to do well, not only in the short term, but long term. And then it probably doesn't matter as much which therapy you choose. Saying that, with our different options, different modes of administrations, different efficacy and safety profiles, the way I like to break it down is on the moderate to severe spectrum. If you're on that more moderate end, what does that mean? You're not extremely anemic. You don't have significant ulceration on colonoscopy. You haven't had multiple courses of prednisone. You're able to get through a day of work or so forth. So on the more moderate end, not responding to mesalamine and been on maybe one course of prednisone, I usually like to start with the more targeted therapies, right? So although all of our therapies are extremely safe, and I think it's very important to tell a patient that up front, why not start with the ones that are the most targeted, the best safety profile? So for ulcerative colitis, I put them into three categories. That's vedolizumab, our anti-integrin. That's our IL-12/23 or selective IL-23 inhibitors, which we now have three of. So ustekinumab, and then our three selective IL-23 inhibitors, risankizumab, guselkumab, and mirikizumab, and then our S1P receptor modulators. And these are our oral agents, and this is etrasimod and ozanimod. So I think that's what I'm thinking on the more modern end. If the patients are more severe, if they were just hospitalized or even not hospitalized, significant ulceration, low albumin, not responding to prednisone, having trouble leaving their house, then they're either getting infliximab or upadacitinib.
Perfect. And what should we know about the usage of steroids these days?
So I think that the first point is we don't want patients, obviously, to stay on steroids long term, but sometimes there's a necessary evil. So I think the two most important things is if an ulcerative colitis patient needs a steroid course already, you need to be thinking about an advanced therapy. If one of my patients gets a steroid course and then they're flaring again, they're not getting another steroid course. It's time to move on. Number two, you need an exit strategy. So most of my patients, I start on 20 milligrams twice a day of prednisone, and I'm looking to taper that off in anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks, depending on how the patient's doing, and depending on how that advanced therapy I'm starting is doing. And I'm adjusting that taper while I'm in close communication with the patient. And the last part about steroids, if anybody's on steroids for more than 3 months total, you really want to remember to screen for osteoporosis, osteopenia with a bone density scan.
Great. And a follow-up question to that, under what circumstances do you think we can skip steroids altogether and go on to one of the more advanced therapies?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think some of our current mechanisms of action and newer therapies that hopefully will be approved in the next few years might give us some options for steroid-sparing agents. So I think first for ulcerative colitis, if somebody's flaring on the more moderate end, I use a lot of rectal therapy. So I use a lot of budesonide foam, and I use that as a bridge to advanced therapies rather than prednisone. If they're sicker, our faster-acting medication, something like upadacitinib, a lot of times we might be able to taper off steroids more quickly or avoid steroids, because that's an agent that's going to work extremely quickly.
Thank you very much. So now let's head into the details. Could you share the pros and cons of the following groups, all of which you had mentioned? The anti-TNFs, anti-integrins, S1P modulators, interleukin-12/23, interleukin-23s, and JAK inhibitors. So a lot for you to do, but take your time.
All right, sounds great. So let's start, you know, going back to that moderate to severe. So we'll start on the more moderate end. And we could start with the S1P receptor modulators. So if you look at their clinical trial data, Very nice efficacy data. However, over 70% of the patients included in these trials are bio-naive. So the patients I'm really using the S1P receptor modulators are really moderate patients that are bio-naive. What are the benefits? They work well and they're oral, right? And they're also a safe class. And I think people get concerned about all the testing you need to do before or right when you start, but these are very safe therapies. Saying that, what are the negatives? There is some baggage to get things started. You need an EKG, right? You want them to see a dermatologist and ophthalmologist around the time of starting. You have to see what other oral medications they're on. So there's a little more testing that as GI doctors are probably not used to, but I think a very effective therapy. Then you have our other anti-trafficking mechanism, vedolizumab. This has been approved for ulcerative colitis since 2014. Very effective agent for moderate to severe ulcerative colitis. Again, I think it does work best first line or early in the disease course. So, a second line, third line, if they haven't had a disease for too long of a time. Very effective, very safe. Moving on to ustekinumab and our selective IL-23 inhibitors. So, first to talk about this class in general, this is also an extremely safe class. It's also a very effective class. And if you look at the efficacy data and the endoscopic data, it does a very good job on the more moderate patient, but also in that moderate to severe range. So these medications I use, not only if you're just moderate, but if you're getting closer to that more severe phenotype. Also, depending on which one you use, whether it's ustekinumab or selective IL-23 inhibitor, with ustekinumab, there's one initial infusion. With the selective IL-23 inhibitors, there's three infusions. And then the maintenance are injections. So with ustekinumab, it's an injection once every 2 months. And with our selective IL-23 inhibitors, it's once a month to once every 2 months. Now, which IL-23 inhibitor to choose from? Again, we have three: risankizumab, mirikizumab, and guselkumab. We don't have any head-to-head comparisons, and we don't have as much data in ulcerative colitis. But practically, what I'm doing is I'm using more and more guselkumab. And the reason is there's a subcutaneous induction option. So, as I mentioned in this class, most of the therapies you need an initial IV infusion, whether it's one with ustekinumab or three. With the selective IL-23 inhibitors with guselkumab, you just need to do once monthly injections. Moving now to, let's say you're passing that moderate severe and moving to that severe category. That's where our anti-TNFs play. And still a very effective therapy for ulcerative colitis. But really, when I'm talking ulcerative colitis and anti-TNFs, I'm primarily talking about infliximab. I don't think adalimumab works very well. And if you remember from the VARSITY trial, which was head-to-head vedolizumab versus adalimumab, vedolizumab outperformed it. So when I'm talking TNF, I'm talking infliximab. I think it's a very effective therapy. It is a very safe therapy, but it does have that higher infection risk compared to 23s and vedolizumab and has that very low risk of lymphoma. Lastly, we have our JAK inhibitor. We have both tofacitinib and upadacitinib. Pretty much when I'm using a JAK inhibitor, I'm almost primarily using upadacitinib, and we have some real-world data showing that that outperforms tofa. And just in our clinical practice, we think that works better. And I think this is a very effective agent as well. It's a pill. It heals very well. It works quickly. There is an increased risk of infection, so you do need to vaccinate for shingles, especially very important. And then there's this baggage around the cardiac risk.
Very good. For those just tuning in, you're listening to GI Insights on ReachMD. I'm Dr. Peter Buck, and I'm speaking with Dr. David Udisman about ulcerative colitis care. So, Dr. Udisman, what should we know about rescue therapies in ulcerative colitis?
So, you know, when we say rescue therapy, what that means to me is somebody is flaring, they're sick, right? What can we do to get them out of this acute flare? Right. And we touched on prednisone a little bit earlier, but here we're sort of moving past that. And again, this is where infliximab and upadacitinib play. And I think in these scenarios and how quick you could get somebody an oral pill, I'm using upadacitinib more and more in these patients. So it could be steroid sparing, it's oral. It works well in the more moderate patient. It also works well in the more severe patient that fail multiple medications and does a great job healing. So when I hear rescue therapies, I'm thinking upadacitinib or infliximab. Now, we might have had patients that have been on a TNF or been exposed to a JAK. So in those situations, we have to start thinking a little bit more outside the box. And where the field is moving is with combination therapies. And from combination TNF and thiopurine, now we're talking about combining two different biologics or a biologic and a small molecule. And really, what that looks like most of the time is you use a baseline safe therapy, and all of our therapies are safe, but a baseline therapy of vedolizumab or 1223 or 23 inhibitor, and combine that with upadacitinib or infliximab. And we should have some data released, hopefully by mid to end of 2026, on a larger phase two program that could give us more insight on how these patients do with combination therapy.
Looking forward to that. So when treating patients with ulcerative colitis, how do you assess when it's time for surgery as opposed to going to the next medication?
Great question. And I think this is one of the more difficult parts about managing inflammatory bowel disease and ulcerative colitis. So I think first, there's never a wrong time to discuss it, right? There's obviously the acute indication. So if somebody's severe in the hospital, losing weight, having fevers, you're worried about toxic megacolon, there's not really a choice. You're talking about surgery. If you have somebody that's exsanguinated, you're talking about surgery. If you have somebody with high-grade dysplasia or cancer that's not resectable, you're talking about surgery. But that's a minority of our patients, which is a good thing. So what about the rest? And I think this is something where you need to build that doctor-patient relationship and where your patient's coming from. And I have some patients that are like, doc, I don't want a surgery. Keep giving me whatever, combine whatever you want. We want to avoid it. But then there's others that they're sick of feeling well for 6 to 9 months and then feeling sick for 6 months and be in this constant cycle. So if I have a patient on the third therapy, and usually that's my cutoff, and you can do sooner, you could do later. Again, there's not a right time point, but usually in my practice, by that third therapy, I introduce the idea. Not to say that's what we're doing next, just to get a better understanding about how patients feel about it.
So how many therapies can you go through?
If you go by class, I would put our anti-trafficking in one class. So that's our S1Ps and Vetos. That's class one. You have our 23s and 1223s as class two. You have TNFs class three and JAKs class four. So you have four classes. You could combine different classes. And then we have some therapies that are not FDA approved. We use it less and less commonly now at NYU because of upadacitinib, but I still have patients that come in that we give IV cyclosporine as an inpatient and then transition them. We could use something like Prograf as an outpatient, as an induction agent. So we have these other options that we're doing less and less common. So we have plenty of options and we could combine, but we also want to be thoughtful while we're doing this. I will also tell a patient at a certain point, this isn't making sense, right? We're not getting that patient better. And just one last point on this. I also think, yes, I mentioned how quickly some of these agents could work, but also we want to be thoughtful, right? So we want to give that specific agent enough time, whether we optimize the dose, give it more frequently, give a higher dose of a JAK inhibitor longer, before giving up on that class and moving on to the next class.
We're in the last few minutes of our conversation, and do you have any additional thoughts that you'd like to share with our audience today?
I want to come back to what I said originally, that the most important thing is to treat early. And if you get patients on advanced therapy early, they're much more likely to do well, not only in the short term, but have great long-term outcomes. I think the difficult part with ulcerative colitis is how do you define that right patient? It's very easy if somebody's coming into the office going 10, 15 times a day, extremely sick, can't go to work, that's a no-brainer. But what about those patients in between? So things that I think about, where do I need to get this patient onto an advanced therapy early, even if they don't look so sick in my office? Are they anemic? Does the colonoscopy have significant ulceration? Have they been on multiple courses of steroids? Are they not making it to work or school? Any of those four things, I'm talking about advanced therapy soon and not doing a course of prednisone and mesalamine.
Dr. Yudisman, we always learn so much from you. Thanks so very much for sharing this wonderful, important information.
Thanks so much for having me.
For ReachMD, I'm Dr. Peter Buck. To access this and other episodes in this series, visit GI Insights on ReachMD.com, where you can be part of the knowledge. Thanks for listening and looking forward to learning with you again very soon.